his first articles, published in 1969. Then he went on to write two books with Jerome Clark. The Unidentified and Creatures of the Outer Edge. Oh, this is my kind of guy, I can tell. Lauren Coleman has a forthcoming book, April of 99, on the international situation regarding Bigfoot and related humanoids, and a journal, The Cryptozoologist, slated for publication at the end of 98. So, I could go on and on and on. He has many, many, many years of study, academic and investigative work in the field to his credit. Has been all over the media. Here is Lauren Coleman. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Art.
Great to have you. I've been looking forward to this one for quite a while, and I'm probably going to start out with an area that that I'm not sure you're comfortable with, but there are two things. One, we have been getting all these incredible reports, Lauren, of dolphins and whales and other mammal sea creatures literally running out of the sea, as if they were being chased out by something. And there's been too much of it lately. Now I get a story tonight from Honolulu that a Navy ship is set to begin blasting high-volume sounds intentionally at humpback whales, even after a federal judge rejected environmentalist complaints. They're going to let the Navy go ahead. Now, this just doesn't seem like a brilliant idea to me.
Well, I think that I heard you say something about animals attacking people and dolphins beaching and all of that. Of course, really involves, without people there, you wouldn't know that was happening. So we know that for hundreds and hundreds of years, these kinds of things have been happening. I think the involvement in humans sending sonic beams into water is probably not the greatest idea. But I've noticed, over the years, if you stand back a little, a lot of it can be related to the weather. A lot of it can be related to the temperature of the water.
The environment.
The environment. And, of course, humans are part of the environment. So if they're burning up all the forest in Indonesia, then you're going to get more animals coming out of the jungle attacking people, or orangutans being shot.
Or monkeys in Japan attacking people. We've got reports of... Now, this is really a strange one, Lauren. Mountain lions beginning to stalk hunters. What would you say about that?
Well, I've noticed the whole situation in the West has really been pretty dramatic lately because humans are getting deeper into wilderness areas where they were not before. So you have joggers being attacked, hunters being attacked, and it's mainly because man is the encroacher there. It's not the mountain lions are coming out. It's that we're going deeper into wilderness areas that we, weren't building houses on the edges of, wetlands and different
sure.
things like that.
So, in other words, you think it may be us, it may be environmental, but it's not the animals suddenly turning against their owners. Cats are not going to be leaping on old ladies' faces or anything.
No, I think people forget. I mean, I remember during the mid-70s where there was quite a few different people looking at different animal attacks and relating them to actually the phases of the moon. And we have a big solar eclipse tomorrow and, new moon, so maybe we'll have more animal attacks if you believe in that theory. But, these kinds of things have been happening for years and years and years. It's just that when they come in waves and they do seem to clump, then people think, well, my God, this is all new. And maybe that's not quite exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm. You have researched for years and years and years Bigfoot.
Yep.
Bigfoot is one of my all-time favorite topics. Lauren, in your professional opinion, is Bigfoot real or the figment of our overactive imaginations?
No, I think there's actually creatures in the Pacific Northwest that are unidentified primates. And I have... I think there's a lot of hoaxing and there's a lot of misidentification in different parts of the rest of the United States, but in the Pacific Northwest, there's a creature that's anywhere between 6 to 9 feet tall. It's bipedal that leaves behind footprints with five toes. Giant footprints. That's why they call it Bigfoot. And before that, up in Canada, it was called Sasquatch and still is.
Well, shouldn't we have more than footprints? I mean, I've seen, as you point out, there's been a lot of hoaxing, and people walk around on stilts creating giant footprints and that kind of thing. How do you delineate between the hoax and the real thing?
Well, hoaxers forget that people that really know footprints well, which we're talking a lot about, some police investigators, forensic scientists, and different folks like that, as well as anthropologists and primatologists, the footprint leaves specific cracks and marks that are very, very related to it being an animate, you know, object.
Not easily reproducible.
Not fake. So if you have a person that has a static, you know, either a piece of concrete that's shaped like a big footprint or, you know, like the wooden things you were talking about, those show up as really much more, you know, they're obvious fakes, and people can tell them. And also, where they show up, and, of course, who's finding them, how credible are the witnesses. There's all kinds of different forensic investigative techniques that we use, and as well as psychological ones, to see who these folks are.
Lauren, if we have footprints, why has nobody yet shot one of these things?
Well, people have shot them. But people, there's John Green and some of my other investigative friends have found over the years that there's probably upwards of four or five good stories from the Pacific Northwest of people shooting them. But they shoot them, and then they get very freaked out and scared that, well, I've shot something that's maybe a man, man-like.
Oh, Lauren, I guess I've got to tell you my story. I had a man on my program. He spent several hours on the air, actually, because I was so amazed. And I believed his story. He came upon two Yeti in a densely populated area, not with humans, but with vegetation, low vegetation. And
Yeti as in Asia?
As in Bigfoot.
Bigfoot, okay.
And he shot two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them. And he went through the long explanation on the air. It was an amazingly lucid story, and he buried them.
Uh-huh.
What happened is, he did exactly as you just said. He freaked out, and he and his friend said, look, this is bad news. You know, we're liable to be charged with murder. Even though when he went up and looked at this creature, it was as a Bigfoot looks, but it had rather humanoid features to it, the two of them, a male and a female.
Right.
And he was prepared to take me to the site and dig these things up, Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of the night, my audience had so freaked him out that he just disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, he was scared to death, and he thought he'd be charged with murder. And frankly, I couldn't tell him he wouldn't.
Right. Well, you know the famous case of the Minnesota Iceman, where Frank Hansen had this, in 1968, you know, a carnival or a shopping center exhibit of a man frozen in ice, you know, like a Bigfoot type creature.
Oh, yes.
And, he said that there was a mysterious owner, a millionaire, who was behind it.
Right.
And it was when he crossed back and forth into Canada that the Smithsonian told the FBI to investigate it. And they replaced the real body with a fake that they had constructed in Hollywood. And it's those kinds of things. Even when the body is perhaps, you know,
so in other words,
cured.
They took this guy into custody, Lauren, and melted the ice and found a fake body?
No. The FBI, when they got involved, Frank Hansen said, apparently in the middle of the night, he switched the body. So the local police department, the FBI, you know, became disinterested because they saw that this was, you know, a fake. And before that, when Ivan Sanderson and Bernard Heuvelmans had showed up and taken pictures and smelled the rotting flesh, we knew that it was a much more real. So the whole idea that there are no bodies, that there have not been any bodies, that those, you know, there's no hair samples or things like that. It's just not true. But we're still really at the beginning of the stages of looking at Bigfoot. If you look at the securing of mountain gorillas, it took over 60 years to come up with a mountain gorilla after expedition went to Africa specifically looking for mountain gorillas. Well, the modern era of Bigfoot really starts in 1958. So we're still at the beginning stages, but, you know, for Americans who are everything they have to get right away, it's, you know, fast food thinking.
Sure. How much really good evidence is there that they exist? There are footprints. You just told us a story. It sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
But what else exists? A fur? Has there been fur tested that is anomalous?
There's been fur that has been said to be unknown primate, near human, and, you know, hair samples all the way from China or Nepal. You know, for those kinds, for the Yeti and the Yeren and the Wildmen, and some of the samples from Ohio of what's called the Grass Man there. There's a new book called Bigfoot in Ohio that's really good. And
The Grass Man?
The Grass Man. That's just a local name. You can go to almost any state, and if there's enough reports, you have a local name.
Okay, what do we know about Bigfoot? Is Bigfoot nocturnal? Is Bigfoot, what do we know?
Well, I think you've got several things going on here. Bigfoot is a generic term that's used too loosely for what I think are many different kinds of creatures, unknown primates.
Right.
But if we're talking specifically about the Pacific Northwest Bigfoot, we know that it's man-like, it's bipedal, it probably builds nests. It is mostly nocturnal, although obviously, you have witness accounts that are at the beginning and end of the Bigfoot day.
You say it builds nests?
Yes. Yes. Very similar to what we're finding among gorillas. You know, there's been, they use vacant buildings. They, you know, it's not, they don't use caves as much as some other types of animals, but there has been incidents where different beds and different kind of nesting structures have been found in the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia.
Very interesting. Listen, I'm short of commercials. Sure. Bigfoot makes nests, huh? That's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, you were asking for different kinds of evidence, and that's one of them. You know, the footprints is another, the hair samples.
Have you found a nest?
I have not personally found a nest. I've talked to and interviewed various people that have. I found footprints. I've heard screeches. I've smelled smells, you know, so I've been that close. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have had very close encounters.
Oh, yes, I know. You say you have heard Bigfoot, huh?
I've heard a screeching type sound that could be a Bigfoot, or it could have been a type of bird. You know, I did not see the creature. I was in an area investigating specific reports of creatures that had made those sounds, and people had seen them when they'd made those sounds. So,
okay. Well, I've got something that I want you to hear. Here it is. That sound, Lauren?
Is that the Alan Berry tape?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure. That came actually from Linda Moulton Howe, and it was represented to be the real thing, taped by some hunters.
Right. Let me say, I want to reserve judgment on that one. I've heard some stories about how that might have come about with various manipulations, so I'm still up in the air about the reality of that.
But don't they say that about everything? For example, even the best evidence there is said to be, the videotape, the Patterson tape, there's a lot of people calling that a hoax now.
Yep, there have been, and unfortunately, last October on the 30th anniversary, there was this whole story about that a guy named John Chambers in Hollywood had produced it. And
that's right.
John Landis knew all about that. Well, a woman named Bobby Short, a great investigator in Southern California, went out and did an interview with John Chambers. And John Chambers, who had won an Academy Award for doing the makeup for Planet of the Apes, told her that he let that story go on for years because it was actually a wonderful publicity within the Hollywood community for him to act like he was responsible for.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding.
So, and that's now been published. I published it in England. She's published it in the newsletter of the North American Science Institute.
I take it then that you feel the Patterson tape is legit.
Oh, I do. I think it's a, you know, and you have to start with films. You have to start with the people that took them. And I think Roger and Bob are quite credible people. Roger Patterson's dead now, but Bob Gimlin's still alive, and I've read interviews, and I've seen tapes, and I've talked to people that know him really well, and, you know, I've talked to quite a few people about those two gentlemen over the years, and that's where I start psychologically looking at the witnesses. Did they have anything, you know, was there anything in it for them? And Roger Patterson was passionate about Bigfoot. He went out there looking for Bigfoot, and he found it, and once he found it, then nobody believed him. It was a sad story.
Yeah, there are a lot of people